Ouais, on va essayer, puisque sinon on va en trouver. Ok.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second session on reuse of wastewater. We had a very interesting session yesterday, and I'm sure there will be an equally interesting session today. We have quite a lot of presenters today, so we'll try and be strict with time. We have 8 presentations over this morning, so we'll divide that into 2 sessions. This session this morning will have 4 presentations, and in the second session after the break we'll have another 4. Each presenter will be given roughly 20 minutes, so if you can finish early then we can have a bit more time for questions, and we'll try and keep our questions, if we have any burning questions, to the end as well. We've been given a list of presentations, but we won't follow the same order that's in the program, because it seems to make more sense to group them into ones of thematic similarity. And so I'd like to introduce as well, for those who don't know already, but I think he's more popular here than I am. My name's Tom Sue, and I'm the Executive Director of IWRA, and on my right is Bruno Moller from IRSTEA, which is the French Scientific and Technology Research Group for Water and Environment. I'll let Bruno moderate this morning's session. Thank you, Bruno.
Okay. So for those who don't know me, so I am Bruno Moll from IRSTEA here. So I am working or convening a laboratory in which we are conducting research on irrigation equipment and its performance, whatever the quality of water, and all what deals with irrigation practices with an experimental farm that could be visited on Wednesday morning. This is one of the visits which is available for you. So the first part of the session will be dedicated to the aspect on cost and benefit analysis mainly, and so we will have in this order Majid Bouzid from BRGM, then we will have Rémi Declerc from a small company, a startup, then we will have Alfieri Police. And at the end of the morning, what we said Miss Santosh Deshmukh is not here, and no one is able. You mean he's not yet here, or
he couldn't come?
Okay, so Marco De Santis is here. Yeah. Okay, so you will close the first part of this second section. Okay, so I will call Majid Bouzid, please. Hein? Non.
To move for next time.
Yeah, the left one. Where is the coral?
No, but the... Oh.
They sit here next to the coral.
The usual tribute to technology.
Good morning, everybody. I am Majid Bouzid from BRGM, which is, do you understand me? Which is French Geological Survey. So my presentation deals with the economic evaluation of treated wastewater under use. This work is part of European Indian project entitled Supporting Consolidation, Replication and Scaling Up of Suitable Wastewater Treatment Under Use Technology in India, which is acronym is Saraswati. The research question is how much are individuals willing to pay to improve wastewater treatment and reuse it for irrigation, so particularly in agriculture. My short presentation will set up in five points as the guidelines. First, I will recall you on some benefit of wastewater reuse. Then introduce you to the concept of total economic value and the evaluation method. Third point, I will present you a literature review on this issue. And then I come to some statistics on the willingness to pay from this literature review. Then I finish with some main conclusion and perspective. Please. Sorry, how much time?
20 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
So wastewater reuse, especially in agriculture, as you know, bring multiple potential benefits, such as for farmer additional water supply for irrigation, improved water supply, reliability during period of growth, reduce the need of fertilizer and nutrition, and saving cost of fertilizer. For urban development, increase availability of limited fresh water for potable use. Also, cost saving in water treatment and/or water supply expansion, especially for industrial water industry. Also, it can increase the aesthetic value of river and the coastal area, which is an opportunity for recreation and tourism. Regarding our environmental benefits, reuse reduce discharge to sensitive water bodies and improve their water qualities, and reduce the diversion of fresh water from sensitive bodies such groundwater, prevent pollution of wastewater, etc. This is are not exhaustive benefits. But you know. However, most of this benefit are not marketable and have no price. So traditional cost benefits analysis don't accurately reflect the total benefit or the economic value that community place in this benefit generated by a reuse project. Yeah, please. So, in environmental economics, this potential benefit in general and in particular for treated wastewater can be captured by the concept of total economic value, TEV, which is commonly summarized by this well-known figure, which represent it's provide a framework for organizing different category of value, environmental value that can be associated with treated wastewater. Here I give some example for the case of treated wastewater. So the framework usually divide the total value, economic value, by two class, use value and then no use value. Use value, use value is consumptive use of wastewater in this case. So use value can be classified into three categories: direct use, which is come from consumptive use of wastewater, such in irrigation, and direct use, which include benefit value much that as such as aquifer recharge or discharge to wetland or river to support ecosystem. Option value means that the wastewater is not directly used now, but it can be used in the future. And also the second category is now use value, which is also value that individual may derive from treated wastewater without ever using it now or intend to use it now. So there is biggest value, existing value, and altruistic value. I give some example here. I will not take a lot of time to explain this figure. So the benefit is assessed as the variation between the total economic value with a reuse project and without a reuse project. So in environmental economics, there is several methods to assess this total economic value and benefit. Usually this method, economics method, are classified in three categories, which is stated preference method, such as contingent valuation method, choice experiment, or which is also called the conjoint analysis or modeling choice. There is also revealed preference method, which is based on the first method are based on hypothetical and contingent market. The revealed preference method are based on the actual market, existing market. In this category, I can mention hedonic price method, travel cost method, or cost of illness method. There is also some method based on cost assessment, which is a proxy of cost, such as restoration cost method or avoided damage method. There is also other method, more general, which use existing previous study, which is a benefit transfer method and meta-analysis method. It's two remarks from this, that only the method, the first type of method can assess the world economic value that I presented before. However, this method are a little bit complex and based on the survey, which consists to ask people individually how much they are willing to pay for any environmental benefit. Okay, next, please. So we have conducted the comprehensive literature review on the empirical application dealing with economic valuation of recycled wastewater. This review are based on published paper and peer review, such as Easy Web Science, specific data, specific database related to environmental economic value, such EVRI, which is Environmental Valuation and Research Index, or RED database. From this literature, we have found 71 studies dealing with this issue, of which 28 focusing exclusively on recycled wastewater evaluation. The constat is there is limited but growing number of empirical studies since 1987, as represented by the cumulative figure of number of study. But so from this search literature, we have developed a database study with some information like bibliographical detail, field application, methodological detail, which method they used, model, payment vehicle, etc. And also survey implementation, population, type of population survived, the sample, and the valuation, statistical summary. which means the value of willing to pay. So first result from this literature review, mainly based on the 28 studies which detailed. So there is a large there is regarding the geological distribution. Majority of studies were conducted in developed countries with scarce water resources, such as Australia, where we have identified 6 studies, Greece with 5 studies, Spain 3 studies, Cyprus 2 studies. Some studies are conducted in scarce water resource countries, such in the United States, Canada, and Switzerland. However, few studies were found for less developed countries, especially in India, with 3 studies, Jordan, Kenya, and Ethiopia, respectively, with 1 study. So the most regarding the valuation method, the most used method is CV method, which is a contingent valuation method, followed by experimental choice method, choice experiment method with knife study, and other methods such as shadow price method with only 6 studies. Regarding the service evaluated, the majority of studies are dealing with water quality improvement. Some studies, 35%, dealing with only quantity improvement. And 13 studies are dealing with improvement treatment of wastewater, which include even capacity of treatment or technology of treatment. And then other studies dealing with other issues such as groundwater recharge or water restriction avoidance. So from this study, we have assessed the value of willing to pay on 2 international dollars of 2014 using PPP, which is the Purchase Power Parity Convention Index developed by World Bank, and then normalized all value in a common monetary unit, which is expressed in willingness to pay per household or per farm per year. However, not all valuation results can be compared directly. The range of study examined allowed to derive a large willingness to pay estimate. Regarding the value. So the value are derived from 28 studies, but in each study there is several estimates and several models of estimation. The mean adjusted willingness to pay value was estimated to $52 per household per year. However, this value varies from 0.4 to $2,067 per household and per year. It should be noted that there is a heavy base towards study focusing on benefits of water quality due to the diversity of service evaluated, especially in also it's this value are biased because of there is more estimate in developed country than other countries. So the main conclusion from this literature review is that qualitative literature review confirmed that the lack of information, of knowledge and information regarding the benefits valuation of wastewater reuse. There is also very few empirical study in developing countries. We noticed that there is heterogeneity in scope and benefits being evaluated in the existing study. Stated preference methods, such as the contingent valuation method, are the most accurate but more at the most used and because it's most accurate, but more complex to implement, because it's based on survey, which can be costly and long. Also, there is a number of problems still come up in the conversion of value in common monetary unit, etc. And regarding the perspective, even this limits, we try to generate benefit estimate according to category of value for which the objective is to support cost benefit analysis. We have also conducted systematic qualitative quantitative review of selected studies, 28 studies, using the database that we have developed, and also a meta-analysis method, which is a method to assess willingness to pay on the basis of other empirical studies. It's a kind of benefit transfer of value from one site which is studied to another site which is not yet studied. So this meta-analysis is ongoing, and we are preparing a paper on this. I don't know. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for this introduction and this aspect of willingness to pay. We have just after a cost-benefit analysis presentation, so I would suggest to have the questions grouped for these two presentations, because I think that they are really... The second will answer some of the questions that have been posed by the first. So please, Rémi, could you come? C'est pas le même PC qu'hier. Qu'est-ce qui se passe ? Okay, so so we have a technical problem. We put it yesterday on this key, and there might be a permutation between the mass storage. So maybe we will go on with the questions, waiting for the sorry for this. Mais tu peux rester là, de toute façon. So do you have questions for Mr. Bouzit? Yeah, we have one.
Yeah, I have a question that you put some values up that's willing to pay,
yes,
ranging from 40 cents to 200 whatever dollars. What's the unit?
No.
What's the meaning of the unit? So we have converted all the value. It's analysis of all studies that they give estimate. So we have converted all value to willing to pay in dollars, per household, per person. However, there is some study who gives the unit use the unit in dollar, for example, dollar per meter cube. So we have using hypothesis, we have converted this value to using size of household and the farms. We have converted this value to dollars per household. Based on the volume used based on the average of volume used per farm or per household.
Yeah.
Per year, yes.
Stinking $260.
The problem with this kind of review is that the assessed value have not a common unit. So our objective in the final is to make some meta analysis, and we must to have a common unit.
I would like to link onto that question. You mentioned a number of $52 per household. But it's not clear to me what is actually the benefit that the people would get out of that. They prepare to pay $52, but what will they get in return for that? And obviously that will vary from household to household and from farm to farm. How much additional water will they get? What will be the benefit they get for paying that $52?
I don't exactly understand what is the utility of this value. This is your question?
Yes, they prepared, the willingness to pay is $52.
Yeah.
So they prepared to pay $52 to receive some benefit.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what the benefit is, because the benefit will vary from household to household and from farm to farm. They won't all be the same benefit they receive.
Yeah. It depends on study. But the benefit was I have in our economic theory based on welfare well-being that we asked in the study economists ask people how much willing to pay, for example, to improve wastewater quality from quality A from quality B to A. Quality B is, for example, water quality that can be discharged and what in the river where people can be swim, and quality A is better quality that people can use it for irrigation to irrigate crop. And this is one example. And other example in study, the economists ask people how much they will to pay to avoid, for example, to avoid the restriction of water during the summer. This is the benefit for for farmer is avoid restriction of water.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that will. Remy has solved the problem we had with the presentation. So let's continue with the cost-benefit analysis, this time based on not on literature review, but on real figures.
Okay. Thank you, Bruno. Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everybody. So to continue with on wastewater valuation and on economy, after Majid's presentation, I'll present you a work we've done here in Montpellier in France on cost-benefit analysis for wastewater reuse project. So, as you all know, wastewater reuse is mainly driven by water scarcity or by the will to preserve conventional water resources. In Mediterranean countries and more countries in the world, wastewater is now seen as a vital and necessary resource. But decision makers now need to identify what are the sustainable scenarios for wastewater reuse. What are the adapted treatment technologies? What are the proper uses? And what is the adapted reuse chain? By sustainability of a wastewater reuse, it's a combination of different parameters. the security, sanitary, agronomic, and environmental security, the profitability, economic for a community and for different private stakeholders, the feasibility, the technical and the regulatory feasibility, and of course the acceptability and the need for an adapted organizational framework. When decision makers can choose among different sustainable scenarios, they need to identify which one is the most profitable. So to assist them in this task, they have many economic tools to assist them. One of them is the cost and benefit analysis methodology that Majid described briefly before. This tool is used for analyzing projects to determine whether or not they are of public interest. We're talking about economic profitability on a given territory for a given community. With this tool, it enables us to assess private profitability. I mean, for the private profitability for the different stakeholders. This tool also enables us to identify which stakeholders lose, win, and the actions to implement to reach win-win solution like subsidization, or adapted tarification for wastewater, for example. So for this method, we need to follow a range of steps. First, we need to identify, to characterize the sphere analysis, which timeline. Do we need to think for 20, 30, 50 years? The geography, what are the boundaries of our territory? And of course, all the stakeholders involved. Then we need to characterize the different reuse scenarios. What are the different reuse chains that could be proposed, and what are, there could be only a single one reuse scenario, but according to the different uses, the different treatment technology, there could be several reuse scenarios. And then we need also to define a so-called business as usual scenario, a scenario without reuse. What would the situation become if reuse is not implemented on the territory? Then, for each of those scenarios, we need to identify and to monetize the costs and the benefits. As Majid says before, we differentiate internal costs and benefits, for example, investments, charges, cost of energy, and or even agricultural benefits. Those costs and benefits are quite easy to monetize and to identify. But for external costs and benefits like social impact or environmental benefits, environmental externalities, it might be trickier. So we need to use the different methodology like the contingent method, the willingness to pay to monetize them. Then we can calculate the net present value of the project and for the different stakeholders, and we can carry out a sensitivity analysis. I will describe this later. The net present value formula here, it looks a bit barbarian, but it's the difference between all the benefits and all the costs for each scenario. The cost within the business as usual scenario being benefits in the reuse scenarios. And economists use the discount rate, the R factor here, to integrate the preference for the present. The fact that 100 euro now have more value than 100 euro in 10 years from now. So once you've calculated the community net present value and the private net present value for each of the stakeholders, we can differentiate four cases. If the community economic net present value is positive, the project may be to subsidize or may be feasible without any intervention. But if it is negative, then the project needs to be dissuaded or is simply not feasible. So we implemented this method on the Clermont-Ferrand case study. Clermont-Ferrand is likely the most studied and the biggest treated wastewater reuse project in France. We're talking about 1,400 hectares of agricultural land irrigated with the major wastewater treatment plants of Clermont-Ferrand, around 400,000 equivalent habitants. This project is running, is operational since 1996, so the cost-benefit analysis we carried out was an ex post one. The major difficulty was to identify the business as usual scenario, the situation as it would have been if reuse was not implemented here. The three main stakeholders involved in this project are the Clermont-Ferrand Metropole, owner of the wastewater treatment plant, the farmers gathered in an irrigation association in the north, and the sugar factory. The sugar factory is the owner of 12 hectares of lagoons that are used in this just after. This analysis concentrate of 2.5%, and we carried it out over a period of 50 years. So here first, the treated wastewater reuse scenario, which is in two steps. First, in winter, the 12 hectares of lagoons are fulfilled with the sugar effluents. The sugar effluents are there stored, and at the end of winter, they are spread on the agricultural land on the 700 hectares. And when using the irrigation distribution system. And when the lagoons are empty in early springs, they are filled with treated wastewater where water is stored and where it can undergo a polishment treatment, a tertiary treatment. Then in summer, water, treated wastewater, is then used by the irrigators to irrigate 700 hectares out of the 1,400 hectares equipped for irrigation. The main crops are seed maize, beetroots, and wheat. Seed maize growing is very important here. As you will see later, seed maize growing is only possible if irrigation is possible. There is contract with seedling companies, and if reuse wouldn't have been implemented, they couldn't have grown seed maize. In the counterfactual business as usual scenario, we had to project it, and we assessed that only 200 hectares would have been irrigated for wheat, maize, with no seed maize or just a few seed maize, using a nearby river, the Bedatch River. Only 200 hectares. And we also projected that the sugar refinery effluent would have been sent to the Clermont-Ferrand wastewater treatment plant at a high cost, at a cost of 1.9 euro per cubic meter. So when comparing the agricultural benefits, the major difficulty was to characterize the crop rotation in the business as usual scenario. Since irrigation was limited, beetroots and seed maize growing were limited too. And what we did is to compare our situation to a nearby agricultural non-irrigated land. And we looked at the crop rotation nearby. And we got our counterfactual crops distribution. If we compare the two agricultural gross margin, it was 73 million euro for the reuse scenario and 60 million euro for the counterfactual scenario over a period of time of 50 years. and it is higher for the reuse scenario since seed maize makes more profit for farmers. So the main costs and benefits we considered here were, of course, the investments for the irrigation material, the lagoons for rehabilitation, the distribution system for sanitary studies, and the annual charges, of course, the agricultural gross margin. The avoided cost for the sugar factory effluent, as I said, it was 1.9 euro per cubic meter, very high cost, and of course subsidized from funding agencies. We did not consider environmental impacts since it was not appropriate here, and it was very difficult for us to put value to monetize the fact that irrigation lower the risk for our irrigant, I mean, in terms of yield. And we also did not consider the impact on the upstream and downstream sectors in terms of employment or of added value. So here on the right is the economic net present value, the total net present value for the project, which is positive of over 50 years, around 10 million euro. So the project was profitable, it was worth subsidization. And if we look at the two main stakeholders, the farmers and the sugar factory, they also got a positive net present value. But incentives could have been implemented to reallocate equally the total net benefit between the two stakeholders. But all those deterministic calculation of NPV were based on hypotheses. Hypothesis on the future, hypothesis on the projected situation. So we needed to carry out a sensitivity analysis. A sensitivity analysis, we use the Monte Carlo method to deal with the uncertainty of the main parameters, the parameters with the highest uncertainty. So we choose the six parameters with the highest uncertainty, the energy price increase rate, the sugar factory effluent treatment cost, and so on and so on. And here is the deterministic value we used in the deterministic approach I presented before. And we selected a range, a lower and a upper limit for this value. And we recalculated for 10,000 times the net present value, drawing every time the value for each of these parameters within the lower and the upper limit. Then we got NPV dispersion for all our parameters. Here are the results. In green, you can see the total net present value, the economic profitability. As you can see, we are always, in every situation, we are above zero. So in every situation, we got a positive NPV for the project. It's the same for the sugar factory, even with a higher profit. But for the farmers, we got in 3% of the cases, we got a negative net present value. So the objective was to test the robustness of a result, and here it's quite robust, since only 3% for farmers got a negative net present value. Here are the deterministic value we calculated before. So for in green, for the 10 million euro value we calculated before, we are above this. We are below this value for 77% of the situation. For the sugar factory in red, we are below the 43% of the cases, and for the farmers, we are below for 87% of the situation. So, if you want, the cost-benefit analysis, it's an appropriate economic tool for decision makers, but it needs to be implemented properly, not only to consider internal cost and internal benefits, also to consider environmental externalities, social impacts. And when more and more cost-benefit analysis will be carried out, we realize that more and more reuse projects will be profitable for the community and not even only for the different stakeholders involved. In Clermont-Ferrand, the treated wastewater reuse is profitable, but as I said, collective incentives could have been implemented. Investment subsidies could have been lower since the project was profitable, was more profitable than the value of the subsidies. We need to consider different time horizons and present time preference from the collectivity and the private point of view. And to go further in research and for further development, we think it would be appropriate to develop new indicators, adapted indicators, tailored indicators for this social and this environmental aspect. Maybe indicators that could be easily replicable or quite fast to implement. And of course, we need more feedbacks about cost benefits on cost benefit analysis from France and from around the world. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Rémi, for this interesting presentation based on existing figures and the existing projects. And I open the floor for the questions.
I understand there is a balance between subsidies and the profitability of the project. So is there a situation when you can get a profitable project with no subsidies? I mean, if you decrease the subsidies, but still the project is profitable, as in your case, can you push that to a limit where no subsidies can have still a profitable project? In theory, I think it is possible. Is it in practice?
In practice, it might be difficult because at the beginning of a project, subsidies may be necessary, but we can imagine something like more like a loan, since projects are profitable in on long terms. Like here, it would have been possible, but maybe that subsidies or loans are necessary at the beginning.
Still, you can find a minimum subsidies.
Minimum subsidy that that is necessary for starting the project, but without breaking it. But that might minimize the cost for the state or for the community.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for impressive presentation. But
thank you.
I think first it's a very special case. I mean, it's not a common case. Your case,
Clermont-Ferrand. Clermont-Ferrand.
Yeah. It's a very special case.
Sure.
Second, you mentioned that the lagoon in the winter they use the normal source, and then in the summer they use the wastewater, treated wastewater. Okay. What is the source of the water in the summer before business, before the new business? What's the source?
For irrigation?
Yeah.
Before treated wastewater?
Yeah.
They do not irrigate. They only irrigate with treated wastewater. First, in winter, they use the sugar effluent, but it's not for irrigation. It's just spread on land when there is no crops.
No crops.
So the first step, the step with the sugar effluent, they are spread in winter, at the end of winter, when there is no crop directly on land. But when they start irrigating in early spring and in summer, they use the treated wastewater. That's the second step. There is actually only one step of irrigation.
One season.
If it's clear. Before the project. Before the project, they used the nearby river, the Bedat River, to irrigate only not even 100 hectares
for using small systems, small pumping system, with so that was not organized at all.
In the water source.
Yes,
this is the motivation.
Yes.
You know, if the water is available, I think the business would be keep as usual.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, sorry, that the main driver for this project was water scarcity.
But
there is no water. There is no groundwater, and there is not enough conventional water resource, no surface water, no groundwater here. Yes.
This makes the case clear. But I would really appreciate if you can make comparative analysis with no action. I mean, if business as usual go, business as usual and the new system. This is really, show that it works. Scenario. But you did only the scenario for one scenario, which is really, you need to compare. To see how this is a positive to the community.
But the method to approach its uncertainty, it's either you can select several scenarios, you can project 10 scenarios, 10 business as usual and 10 reuse scenario, or you can deal with uncertainty using the sensitivity analysis. We chose here to use the sensitivity analysis, but we could have proposed several scenarios.
At least two scenarios, this for comparative.
Excuse me. I am sure that there is a lot of questions that will come progressively in your mind. So I would suggest to stop this interesting debate now and go to the next presentation. Alfieri Police from IRSA, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, Fieri.
Yep, got it. Okay, after these two interesting presentations on cost-benefit analysis, we get a little bit back to the ground, and I will show you something more on the technological side of treated wastewater reuse. And in particular, I will talk about a case study that we've been running in back in the south of Italy, where I come from, on treated municipal wastewater reuse for irrigation. We have been testing non-conventional technologies for a few years now, and I show you some results. The presentation outline is that the one that you see here, and I will talk a little bit about the water needs and the water situation in our region. Then I will give a short overview of possible treatment schemes for wastewater reuse. Then I will go to the case study description and show you some results in terms of both water quality and agronomic results. So Puglia is this region here in the south, in the deep southeast of Italy. And this situation is from 15 years ago, but has not changed very much so far. So we are one of the driest regions in the country and in the Mediterranean as a whole. And as you see, we have only 600 millimeters of rain per year. And we have no permanent rivers nor natural lakes. So we have some dams, some reservoirs, but no natural lakes, no rivers whatsoever. In front of this, we have agriculture-based region. So 80% of land use is cultivated, is dedicated to agriculture, and only a minor part of it is irrigated, but still I would say that the main economic asset of the region is agriculture and tourism as well. So water demand is mostly dedicated to agriculture, and as you see here, we have water coming from regional resources, which is mostly groundwater and reservoirs, but mostly groundwater. We pump water from the ground. And then we have external resources, because we take water from bordering regions. We have a very large aqueduct, and we have long piping systems, and so we take water from bordering regions. Most of this water is used for agriculture, and a lower fraction for industrial and civil uses. So in this situation, municipal wastewater potentially available for use is about an estimate is about 150 cubic meter per year, and we have a situation where there is a growing awareness of this possibility. So many plants are being upgraded for wastewater use now, and probably in a short time, a relevant fraction of this will be available. So this means that we have the possibility, the option of having about 10% of savings on primary water sources. And of course, we have side advantages of the use of treated wastewater, which is nutrient conservation and nutrient supply to crops, and continuous availability of water over the year. In general terms, the opportunities and risks of treated wastewater reuse are many, but in my view, the most important are the ones that I've listed here. So continuous water supply and savings on primary sources are along with the nutrients. Nutrient conservation, so nutrient supply to crops are the main advantages in front of some risks of safety, especially microbiological safety, on chronic effect on soils and eutrophication of storage basins, which are the most relevant. Questions that are raised by the treated wastewater reuse option are about the sustainability of costs, adequateness of technologies, limits and regulation is very, very relevant, because most of our projects are limited and hindered sometimes by limits and regulation, which are often too strict. And then stakeholders' involvement, which is more about cultural changes. When we go to the technological aspects, we see that normal conventional wastewater treatment plant is based normally on activated sludge processes. So we have some pretreatments and then activated sludge, followed by possibly tertiary treatments for polishing the effluent quality. And then we have to discharge into water bodies according to standards. When we switch to reuse, we have often stricter standards, and so we have to manage with upgrades of wastewater treatment plants or adding tertiary treatments to the treatment train. In a schematic way, we can list the main parameters that are relevant for wastewater reuse in groups of parameters, in categories of parameters, and these are suspended solids, microorganisms, toxic compounds, and nutrients. These create some concerns related to clogging of pipes, safety, accumulation of toxic compounds, and possible eutrophication of storage basins. But when we go to technologies, For each and every of these concerns, we have appropriate technologies that can can cope with this, can deal with this. So it is not, in our experience, in our view, it is not a technological problem. Technologies are there. We can improve technologies. We can have nice technological improvements, but problems are not in technologies. In any case, we've been working on different types of tertiary treatments. Basically, the tertiary treatments that are normally used for this type of applications are natural-based treatment, or either chemical tertiary treatments based on coagulation, flocculation, and sedimentation, or natural-based treatments, or those based on filtrations. Otherwise, we can work on upgrade or improvement of wastewater treatment plants. And our activity at IRSA is dedicated mostly on these two aspects of upgrade of wastewater treatment plant and tertiary treatments based on filtration. The case study that I will describe today is been operated for the last 3 years about at a wastewater treatment plant located in the about 40 kilometers from our lab, real scale, a full scale wastewater treatment plant with a normal activated sludge layout followed by tertiary treatment, chlorination and outlet. And here we have placed a pilot plant where we have treated part of the inlet. So we have taken part of the influent of the wastewater treatment and treated it through this pilot plant, which is a IFAS MBR plus UV disinfection treatment. And I will describe this in a minute. After this, the treated wastewater was sent to a test field of about 3,000 square meters. And this test field was cultivated for horticulture by our colleagues of the agronomic department of the university. And here we have tested different types of water, meaning conventional water from the well, pumped from the well, effluent from the wastewater treatment plant, and effluent from the pilot plant. This is the pilot plant, the scheme. It is based on integrated fixed film activated sludge membrane bioreactor, IFAS MBR, which means that the biomass is grown both as a suspended biomass and as fixed film on carriers. So there are plastic carriers, which are these things here, sunk in one of the reactors. And growth of biofilm, or growth of biomass in the form of biofilm, is promoted on these carriers. And the advantage with respect of conventional activated sludge is that we have slower biomass growth and much more efficient biomass. So we have lower sludge production, limited sludge production, and very efficient treatment performance. This is followed by a membrane bioreactor. So in the following tank, there is submerged membranes, ultrafiltration membranes, and so the suspended biomass is removed from the liquid phase through membranes. The effluent of this plant is already of high quality and is sent to storage tanks, to reservoir, in order to match the productivity of the plant with the needs for irrigation. So we need to accumulate into tanks. And then every time the water is sent to irrigation, the disinfection system is switched on. So we have a UV system for disinfection, but the UV is on demand, is only operated when the water is sent to irrigation, to the field. the performance of the plant was good overall, especially in terms of removal of COD, of the organic fraction. We had some clogging problems due to these carriers, and so sometimes the plant was stopped, and this caused a loss of nitrification ability of the system, but this was recovered very quickly. Every time there was a stop in the plant due to problems or clogging or maintenance, then we had a loss of nitrification, but then nitrification was recovered. And so the plant was operated, I forget to say, the plant was operated only for nitrification, so for conversion of ammonia nitrogen to nitrate. Nitrate was then conserved and kept in the effluent and sent to the plant, to the irrigation. In terms of microbiological quality of the effluent, you see the IFAS MBR also already had a very good performance in terms of removal of Escherichia coli. So the effluent was almost without Escherichia coli, but then we observed some growth in the storage tanks due to the fact that the water was stored in the storage tanks, and so there was some bacterial growth. And this was resolved by disinfection. So UV disinfection kept the bacteria low enough to be used for irrigation. Same for Clostridium and same for somatic coliphages. I speed up a little bit, Bruno. Huh? So this is the comparison between the three water sources. Control is well water, wastewater treatment plant effluent. This is the conventional wastewater treatment plant, and you see that we have some problems with disinfection here. And this is the pilot plant effluent, which complies always complies with the limits, except some limited difference in terms of ammonia, which is not relevant from our point of view. When we go to the agronomic results, we have cultivated different crops, but my results now refer only to fennel and lettuce. And this is more for agronomists. This, I'm only a hydraulic engineer, so I environmental engineer, so I'm not very confident with these things, but I will show you the results. When we look at the crop yield, we see that the lettuce and the fennel irrigated with pilot plant effluent have a much higher yield than the same cultures, the same crops irrigated either with the treatment plant or with the control, with the well water. Both when we provided the same amount of external nitrogen and phosphorus, because here we have, of course, the nitrogen provided with the wastewater, and so we have a higher yield due to this nitrogen supply. But also when we decrease, in this case, nitrogen from fertilization, external nitrogens was almost kept to zero. So we only exploited the internal nitrogen that was present in the effluent, and still we had higher yield. And the same for the growing season. We have shorter growing season, so it's faster growth of lettuce and fennel operated, grown with treated wastewater from the pilot plant. Much longer growing season for lettuce of the control water. No problems with microbiological contamination, except some with the wastewater treatment plant effluent, which we have seen that there was some problem with the disinfection of this effluent, but with the pilot plant was okay. And I go to the conclusions. So the two treatment schemes that we have tested and we have compared are the conventional activated sludge and the IFAS MBR technology. So the pilot plant based on ultrafiltration and UV radiation had better performance. And then the operation for only nitrification. So basically, our message is that if we tend towards nitrogen conservation in treated effluents, this is good for the plants. That's trivial, but we don't need such a strict limits for nitrogen as we have now. This is it. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much, Alfieri, for this presentation. I like the idea of keeping in the effluent that will be reused what farmers are adding at a high cost and a high energy cost, because nitrogen is costing a lot. I have an example that I give often. In a potato production, a potato crop, about half of the carbon footprint is due to nitrogen fertilizer. So if we can keep the nitrogen in the wastewater to be reused, we have an extra benefit which is going beyond what was presenting the first two presenters.
I have a comment on this. We have another pilot site in a very intensive horticulture area, and there, when we pump water from the well, the concentration of nitrogen in the well is much higher than the nitrogen in the treated wastewater, because of course nitrogen tends to sink in the groundwater, and so they have to treat well water for removing nitrogen.
Okay, questions?
Thank you for a very interesting presentation. It seemed to be very well thought out and worked very well, but is there any indication at this stage of the financial viability? How much will it cost to provide the water to the farmers, and can they afford to pay the cost?
Okay, thanks for your question. This is the one that I presented is just one part of a more complex experimental activity where we have compared a high-tech technology, which is the one that you have seen here, this complex treatment system for wastewater, which is also expensive in terms of investment and management and operation. And we have compared this with a more cost-friendly tertiary treatment, which is based on gravity filtration through cloth. And, of course, we have compared the effectiveness of the two technologies in terms of water quality and effects on soil, etc., and crops. And, of course, high-tech systems are more reliable and have higher efficiency when you go to maintaining those strict standards. Because the key is the standards. If we have to keep those strict standards for use, which in our country are really like drinking water standards, see? Local limits for use are basically nothing in the water. So if we have to maintain these, we need high tech, and this makes the system more expensive. What we wanted to demonstrate, what we have partially demonstrated, is that we don't need these standards, because there's no effect on crops, there's no effect on soils, especially when you have microbiological quality a little lower, say around 10 to the power of 3 in terms of Escherichia coli. There's no effect of growth or regrowth or accumulation or sinking into the groundwater, and the same for nitrogen. We don't have to keep nitrogen as low as 35 of nitrate. We could more easily keep ammonia in the water, which is also better, and have less expensive technologies, less expensive treatments, and adequate quality for agricultural use. So we have to push on the legislators.
Okay, one question. Antonio Lopez. And it will be the last question after Marco De Sanctis will present his...
It's not a question. It was just a link to the previous question. Talking about wastewater treatment, the question is always, how much should I pay? The question is strongly linked, how much is the risk that you want? So the risk that each country can afford is reflected by the regulations. So there is no magic tool that gives you drinking water from municipal wastewater. This is strongly linked to the risk, once again, you can afford. So avoiding any complex solution about evaluation of the cost, the idea is how much the farmers pay for their water, how much costs the water we produce, and if somebody, according to the risk, can subsidize the difference. It's not so complex, the problem, believe me.
Yeah, thank you for this last comment, Antonio Lopez. I will, during the when, so Marco, please prepare your presentation. I will take this opportunity to say that with Alfieri, we have been involved in a process which is undergoing and in Europe, which is initiated by the DG Environment to identify the possibility to implement a directive on wastewater reuse in Europe. So there is some, and what you were saying is one of the comments and what is the reason. We had yesterday a very interesting presentation from a Chinese colleague that showed the decay of Escherichia coli in the soil and on the high effectivity of the soil capacity to decay the Escherichia coli. Okay, Marco.
Okay, so I'm presenting an innovative type of wastewater treatment plant that was studied and developed in IRSA during the last decades about. Okay, so here you see the conventional treatment plant. Normally we have this big sequel of treatment step, and finally we discharge water in most of cases. We now know that this is not the right way. We should reuse water. Conventional plant can produce high quality water that is suitable for reuse, but they have some drawbacks, like slow settling speed, they treat low organic rate, they have low flexibility, and if you need to reuse, especially in Italy, at least in Italy, you need also chemical and physical disinfection. All this aspect requires a high area, and we also need to spare area. On the opposite, we propose a simple technology with a simple scheme. We just want to screen the wastewater to remove coarse material. We want to treat biologically this system, this water, by this system that is named Sequential Batch Biofilter Granular Reactor. It's SBBGR. And maybe we can add a sand filter, and then we have a water that could be used for agriculture. So which are the features of this system? SBBGR can do all the treatment step in only one section. He is quite flexible. He can treat more wastewater, higher organic load. He produces less sludge. And in the end, we reduce the size of the treatment plant. So here is the scheme of the plant. And this is a sketch of a pilot plant that we have in IRSA. The system is based on biofilter technology. So we have two sections, wastewater section, where we supply wastewater and air, and then we recycle this wastewater in the biological compartment, that is a biofilter. We have filling material entrapped, and the biomass grows in this biofilter. This technology is based on sequential mode, so we have treatment cycles. Each cycle have three steps: filling, treating, and discharging. How we can explain the high treatment ability of the system? It depends from the feature of this plant. We have this fixed bed containing a filling material, and we have a recirculation flow of the wastewater through the biofilter. This recirculation and the feature of the carrier, the filling material, allows the generation of biofilm and granules, so dense and big aggregates of biomass. In this way, we can obtain high sludge retention time and high concentration of biomass. So we have a lot of biomass that can treat more COD, more organic waste, than a conventional treatment plant. And we have high sludge age. That means that we also reduce the net sludge production. So we have less sludge to discharge. Which is the specific aim of this research? We are looking almost to treating wastewater, municipal wastewater from a small community. We decided to monitor two types of parameters, physical and chemical gross parameters, like organic waste, nitrogen, suspended solid, and also parameters like SAR and conductivity that could be important for agriculture, and microbiological parameters, because we want to know something about the safety of the reuse of this wastewater. We monitored the different type of fecal contamination indicators. We monitored some protozoa and also the presence of salmonella. But the final goal of our research was set by our regulation. We work in Italy, so we need to reach an E. coli concentration that is lower than 10 coli per 100 milliliters, and the absence of salmonella in the wastewater. This parameter, as already said Alfieri, are really strict. So in this case, we decided to evaluate not only the treatment by SBBGR followed by sand filtration, but also two options of physical disinfection by UV or chemical disinfection by addition of peracetic acid, in the case that we need this high quality of water. So we monitored the physical and chemical parameter after the biological treatment by SPBGR, and we monitored the microbiological quality of the effluent after each step of treatment. I start with the physical and chemical parameter. You can see that the system, the SPBGR alone, could efficiently remove suspended solid and organic matter, that is the COD. This is important because presence of suspended solid or organic matter can lead to the clogging of irrigation network, so we need to remove them. The system also performed well in nitrogen removal and quite well in phosphorus removal. We know that nitrogen and phosphorus are important for agriculture, but in this case we need to remove because our law requires us to remove. Otherwise we can change a bit the cycle to remove less nitrogen. And just to give one more idea on nitrogen removal, normally in conventional plant we have a separate section for nitrification and denitrification. In this case, biomass grows as granules, and therefore we have some anoxic zone for denitrification and totally aerobic zone for nitrification, and these two microorganisms can coexist in the granules. So we don't need a phase for nitrification and another for denitrification. We simply have both these processes in different parts of the granules in the same time. And this is another way to spare space. What about these other physicochemical parameters? I just want to point out that the salinity and also the sodium absorption ratio are good for agriculture and also for Italian law. And I want to show you a picture of the wastewater before and after the biological treatment with the SBBGR. Now let's move to the efficiency of the disinfection. Firstly, we monitored the efficiency of the biological section. So we can see that the system can remove completely Salmonella that was never detected in the effluent. It has some efficiency also against Clostridium, and this efficiency is like those one of conventional plant, and is really efficient for coli removal. We remove more than 3 logarithmic unit, and indeed this effluent quality could still allow our reuse if we base only on WHO rules. And in case of Italy, we can discharge this water because normally a conventional plant in Italy need disinfection even to reach this value of 500 coli per 100 milliliters. And this is just a picture to show the brightening spots are positive for coli, and you see the influent and the effluent. What about virus and protozoa? The system also was quite effective in removing viruses, but it's really effective in removing protozoa, both Giardia and Cryptosporidium. These protozoa generates cysts, so generally they are quite resistant to wastewater treatment, and they move to the treatment line without any problem. We found them again in the effluent. In this case, we removed almost all the Cryptosporidium, and we even obtain 1.5 log unit removal of Giardia. What happens if we add a sand filter? We add the sand filter, conventional sand filter, on an effluent that still have good quality. So we can see that the filter had an effect on all the parameters we observed. In particular, we never found the Cryptosporidium. We almost removed also Giardia that was present only in 5% of the samples. We reduce Clostridium and phages, and also we obtain the concentration of coli that is lower than 100, on average 60 coli per 100 milliliters. This means that for the only looking at a coli, we can still reuse this water in France, for example, or in Spain, or maybe even in Germany. Looking on the overall efficiency of the system, we have removed more than 3 log units of phages and about 2.6 units of Clostridium. And this is just a picture of the colony of the phages to have an idea of the difference between SBBGR effluent and sand filter effluent. Then, what happens if we add tertiary disinfection? I want to point out that the concentration of peracetic acid and also the dose of UV are quite low if you compare this to the conventional dose that we use in conventional plant, about 3-4 times lower. We can completely remove Giardia and Cryptosporidium. We had a good effect on phages, and we finally meet the limit for Italian reuse that is less than 10 coli. In particular, with peracetic acid, we absolutely removed E. coli, but also with UV, we can keep it to about 5. Differently, we have almost no effect on the Cryptosporidium, that is a spore-forming microorganism, and spores are really resistant to any type of chemical disinfection and also physical disinfection. So you can see from the picture that actually the most effective way to remove Cryptosporidium in this treatment line is the SBB jars plus the filter. Which are the main conclusions that we can say? The physical and chemical quality of SBB jar effluent seems to allow its reuse in wastewater according to the parameter that we monitored. The system, the SBB jar, also acts as a good disinfection system, and we have a quality of the effluent that still allows its direct reuse in some countries. If we add low technological process like sand filtration, we can increase the quality of this wastewater that is compatible with reuse in several countries. And also, we almost removed the protozoa. We are not able to remove completely the Cryptosporidium, but the Cryptosporidium is generally used as an indicator for protozoa. And here we can see that protozoa are not present, are almost not present. Finally, if we add a bit of disinfection with UV or peracetic, we can almost completely remove E. coli, and so we can reuse this wastewater in Italy. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, Marco, thank you very much for this presentation. And the character of the system that could be used at different level, and which is very interesting for different countries which are represented here. Well, I open the floor for questions or comments, please.
Hello. Well, thank you for your very interesting presentation. I was wondering, I mean, during the irrigation period, the quality of the effluent for agriculture may be a certain type. And except the irrigation period, then I guess the water is just discharged in the natural media, the rivers. And then I guess you have a nitrogen problem if you use your SBBGR, because there's an amount of nitrogen there that is left in the treated wastewater that can induce, of course, eutrophication of the natural media. So my question is there a way to switch the wastewater treatment plant for irrigation season and for winter season with no irrigation needs?
Okay, so this study was not directly linked to the irrigation. It's a pilot plant scale study that we performed directly in IRSA. Actually, we can think about storing the effluent of the sand filter, and then we can perform disinfection when we directly need the water for reuse if we don't need it immediately. Otherwise, if we are in a region that are not strict in condition of water, we can directly discharge it without any disinfection because we meet the limit set by Italian law. And about nitrogen, we removed as much nitrogen as we need to comply the Italian regulation. We can remove it better if we need, increasing the duration of the reaction time or working on the organic load rate. And we also can increase the organic load rate and reduce the direct reduction time in the system in order to obtain more residual nitrogen and phosphorus if you want more nitrogen and phosphorus for agriculture. I hope I have answered enough.
Thank you, Sabari.
Yeah, thank you for your presentation, and I mean it is related to the previous one. I have a question related to the standards, because I think this is the core question. Because when we put so high, I mean, standards, then the question is, have we also looked at the other irrigation water, the quality of other irrigation water? Because if not, we can kill reuse by having very high standards, you know, and not take looking first of to the quality of other irrigation sources. This is one question. The second one, we are removing so much of nitrogen and phosphorus, then we are really getting closer to water quality, you know, drinking water quality. Then what is the purpose? So the question is, how can we better match the quality, the wastewater treatment chain, and the reuse the crop that we are going to irrigate? Because I mean, when we are going to use water for irrigation purposes, it's not the same as we are going to use it for other, where, I mean, the exposure is higher. The previous comment was from the person was saying someone has to subsidize, but I mean, you know, when we have high treatment chain, I mean, the subsidy is coming, it's not the state, it's, I mean, the consumer, we are going to, I mean, to subsidize. So the question is not that it is the state has money that can put there. So it's all an overall question of, you know, what kind of standards we should have for agricultural purposes. We are removing nitrogen and phosphorus, and phosphorus, we know that the world is going to run short of phosphorus. So we are really, you know, it's a big mistake that we are doing. I mean, what is the cost and benefit of such reuse activities? So, I mean, your question, I know that it is you are trying to fit to the standards, but I mean, the question is, would be to what kind of standards we should have, and to raise this question at the Italian level, European level, in order not to kill reuse and to have something that is more affordable, that makes more sense. Taking into account these different questions of, you know, the discharge, the quality of the other irrigation sources and so on, and the phosphorus that we are eliminating, the nitrogen and so on. So, I mean, for me, there is an overall question that we need to raise and to debate, because if not, you know, treat it up to drinking water level and that's it, and then forget about. There is no zero risk, first of all. And when we are using it for agriculture, we have to take a certain level of risk. The question is, for example, when you use drip irrigation, then, you know, you get rid of... So there is a different kind of technologies for treatment, for irrigation, using the soil attenuation capacity and so on. If not, you know, I think that we are forgetting what we are doing. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for this comment, Akisa, but Antonio Lopez... Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Antonio and Akisa, for these comments. I think that we share more. I would say on the user side, we all share the same idea that we should keep as much as possible of the nutrients that are coming out from the wastewater treatment plant. And it's really a pity to see so much quantity of phosphorus getting out from the treatment plant, and which is mined well, in Tunisia, for example, but mostly in Mauritania and Morocco, where you have something like 60% of the reserve in the world. And we may run out of phosphorus in 60 to 70 years. So we have to think about that. So thank you. We have to close the session. And we give you an appointment in about 20 to 25 minutes for the last three presentations. Thank you very much.
Bon, alors, putain, il faut que je finisse de faire...